Welcome to Limited Time Only.
I'm Esther.
And I'm Susie.
Limited Time Only is the podcast for anyone who feels there aren't enough hours in their life.
And each week, there's a different topic for you to get your ears around.
Featuring chat, comedy sketches, and interviews with interesting people.
Limited Time Only is a pick-me-up in podcast form.
The special guest later in the episode is Rosie Green. This week, it's time for Being Your Best Self. Do the shake and back and put the freshness back.
So, Suze, tell me, when do you feel like your best self, your best bad self?
Well, really, Esther, I would say when I'm talking to you.
Oh, that's so cute. And very much the correct answer.
Yes. I thought, what will Esther want me to say? No, it is very true. I've been thinking about what my best self, what is my best bad self, my best good self? Are they the same thing? I think for me, the main thing for any of my, I think I have multiple selves. I think we all have multiple selves.
Yes, definitely.
And it depends who we're with and what situation we're in. And the best one, the best self for any given situation, hopefully will come out when required. So for example, the best conversation started during an awkward pause self, because I think we're probably both quite good at that.
Yes, yes, definitely. Yes, it's. I'm sure that's to do with divorcing parents. Always to do
have you
with
divorced
that.
Your parents?
Fill the silence. Fill the silence. Did you ever watch New Girl and Zooey Deschanel? They had a flashback to her parents divorcing, and every time there was tension, she'd be like, "Mommy's all right, Daddy's all right. They just seem a little weird." And she'd sort of do this whole song and dance routine, and I thought, "Yeah, that
resonates." Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
I've not seen that, but that sounds yes.
It's very funny,
and I'm always singing a silly song.
Yes,
to fill
me
the
too.
Silence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Much to my children's annoyance and embarrassment. Oh, God.
You're like, Henry's having a poo.
Yes.
Shut up, mother.
Yes. My daughter, who's now 9, is increasingly embarrassed by me, which I absolutely am thriving on. It's giving me life. So when her friend's around and when it's tea, you know, it's kiddie tea time, and I'll go into the lounge where they're all watching telly or whatever, and I'll be like, "It is time for dinner. Come through to the kitchen. Digga, 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 what you gonna eat for dinner?" And you know, and B's like looking at me. She does the face palm thing. I mean, Henry looks at me, I think, with kind of admiration at the moment. I think he's enjoying it. And then the friends are usually quite pleased. They seem quite, you know, cheerful about the whole thing. But my daughter is not impressed.
Oh, now you see, I do exactly the same, but my daughter has never been unimpressed by that. And I think it's solely because I ran a drama school for 10 years and all of her and her friends came to it. So all of her friends think I'm very cool.
They think
that's
you're cool.
She's told me.
I was going to say, they know that you're an absolute gimp.
Yeah. Oh God, she's off again. But she said they all think you're really cool. So I've got that relationship, and my son's the same, and they're not. I think my son would be slightly more self-conscious. Mm. My daughter says, I don't get embarrassed by anything.
That's good.
Which is amazing. But I think if they hadn't have all come to my drama school with their friends, then I think they might have, the level of embarrassment and eye roll and face planting
I know.
Would have been higher.
But it's like, you know, you have lived with me for 9 years, Beatrice. You do know that I have this tendency to be an absolute plonker. So you're just
going to have glorious.
To deal with it.
It's brilliant, though. I mean, I know when we had lockdown, I remember thinking I'd been housed with the wrong people, because all I wanted to do was make up dance routines. And my lot were like, oh, no, we're not doing that. That's our idea of hell.
Yeah, we were dancing to Gangnam Style every day.
Oh, you see, I should have been in your house.
Yeah. What you couldn't see when I did that little, it is time for dinner. I mean, it's a different tune every time. I was actually doing, it was kind of, sadly, a bit Ricky Gervais office arms.
That's what I was picturing.
Yes. So that's, but it could be, you know, it could be a little tap dance, could be arms in the air, like you just don't care. And I don't care. So that's good. So that's one self. I mean, the next self I did write down was the best make the kids laugh when they're a bit grumpy self, which I can
yes.
do. And the best, oh God, he's throwing up, catchy vomit self. Ooh. Which I can do. So, you know, get into action, get the hands ready. So, you know, there's multiple selves for different situations, but none of them are possible if I haven't had any sleep. So I would say to be my best any of these selves, I have to actually have sufficient sleep, which is difficult when I'm determined to self-sabotage and just not go to bed till like midnight or whatever. And yeah.
Do you think that's... I think I've said this to you before, but I do you think that's kind of a... This is a bit of time I finally got to myself when the kids are in bed.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I'm like, oh, it's peaceful. And nobody's asking me to do anything. Yes. I get yelled at a lot at the moment. Not in
that's
an angry
rubbish.
Way, in a...
No.
Mum, can you find the sellotape? Because I want to make a pirate telescope. Okay, great. You know, or whatever it is. Mum, where are my trainers?
It's usually when you're having a wee as well. I still get a lot of shouting out from other rooms. And mine are 17 and 15, but I still get, Mum. Well, actually, my son goes, Mother. Because we're Dickensian. No, he just calls me Mother. My daughter calls me, my daughter still calls me Mummy, but I do still get from other rooms.
Yeah. Does it ever stop?
It's less. It's definitely less.
I mean, I do it to my mum now just on the phone.
Do you?
Yeah, like, you know, I ring her up and she knows it's going to be, Mum, do you think you could come and babysit for 12 years while I go on holiday?
And it's the rise and fall of the voice, isn't it? Yeah. That you know, it's like, Mum. As soon as my kids say that to me, it's like, I know this is, can I do something? Can
they
I?
They just always want something. Always.
Yeah, they do when they're your kids' ages, definitely.
Constant.
But if it reassures you, my son makes me a boiled egg every morning now.
Well, that is very sweet. Is it well boiled? Is it a...
It's beautiful.
Just
perfect.
Nice and runny.
Like, just how I like it. I like it firm with a little runny bit in the middle. I don't like any snotty white.
I mean, you've made it sound absolutely disgusting.
I'm no Dirk Kerwin on a Waitrose advert.
No.
A snotty white.
It's fun. My kids are snotty whites.
Oh dear.
Yes. Well, an egg every morning is a good way to be a good, you know, your best self, I would say. A little bit of protein.
It is, yes, and he's very, very sweet, and he goes down into the kitchen and the other morning, which made me lazier. It's made me a bit lazier, though, in the morning. I'm not straight out of bed anymore because he'll call up the stairs, Mother, I've made your egg.
Oh, it's so nice.
It's so cute.
You need to encourage this in my children.
Yeah, do, because, I mean, and he's 15, so yeah. You've got, you know, 4 or 5, 6 years with me.
Not many. He'll go quick.
Train him now.
Train him up. Well, talk about training. The other thing that makes me my best self is obviously exercise, which again I can procrastinate into oblivion. Preferably outdoors, I'd say. I think
you're really good at exercising. I always think that you're really good
at... I am, but it's all a facade,
an illusion.
I mean, what I've done is recorded one video of myself going around the woods,
right?
And I just keep saying, hey, I'm back in the woods, putting it on Instagram, but it's just the one jog I did.
Very canny.
In
I like it. I did think it was strange that your hair was red. Now you're very, very grey.
Yes, my hair's actually blonde in it. Yeah. I've tried to colour it in. Oh, no. I do like it, but I mean, often I feel so dreadful on a day that I just can't even exercise. This is right. Okay, therapy session.
Yeah,
I'm sort of crusting over.
Crusting.
Crusting up. I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of... I feel like rigor mortis is setting in before I'm dead. Is that possible?
I mean, I hope not. I've never heard it. It'd be a weird thing to happen.
I'm stiffening up. Well, I was a bit worried yesterday about my toe.
Yes.
Because I've got this... Well, I think it's a fungal nail infection that I've had for quite some time.
Okay.
And my husband keeps telling... And what happens is the toe grows to a certain point and then it just sort of... It kind of grows, but it's like it's dead. And my husband keeps saying it's because the nail bed's dead. And I'm like, well, if the nail bed's dead, does that mean my toe's dead? And so I'm worried I've got sort of, I don't know, scurvy. I mean, I mentioned a pirate's telescope. I've gone further. I'm not having enough vitamin C and I'm dying from the toe upwards.
You're scurvy. You need an apple a day to keep the doctor away. You're dying from your big toe upwards. toe upwards.
Well, at least it's upwards, I suppose.
Yes. I mean, I think you probably just need to go and see a chiropodist and they would help you. And I would think that you're probably not dying from your toe upwards.
Maybe I need to go see a mortician.
You feel crusty.
Could you preserve my toe?
Yeah.
Maybe they could just like do a bit of embalming on that.
Yes.
And then...
Yeah. I mean, I'm hopeful that that's not what's happening. I'm hopeful that we get you for a good, at least another 40 years, I'm hoping. Yeah.
Without that toe, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Be difficult to run though, wouldn't it? You'd be a bit wonky.
I can get a prosthetic one.
That's true. Which toe is it?
It's the big one. I mean, it's just a stabiliser.
But... It's probably the least disposable of all the toes. Maybe go and see a chiropodist, Suze.
If anyone knows what I need to do with my toes, let me know.
I'd go and see a foot expert.
I won't rely on my own weird idea of how bodies work.
Yes. I mean, you're a daughter of doctors, so I mean, maybe they could help as well.
No, they just say I don't know anything about that.
Oh, okay. Yes.
They relinquish any responsibility. especially now they're retired. They're just like, no.
Yeah. Don't need
and
the
then
pressure.
I just Google it and if I come up with leprosy. So, you know.
Oh my God, don't Google anything. You're always immediately dying. I'm imminently about to die.
Well, it sounds like your dog is...
Oh, it's because there's a package being delivered. So that's what she's kicking off about. Ian will be answering the door. They said they'd deliver between 11 and 12, which of course is not convenient because I'm recording. But yeah, I don't blame your parents. Yeah.
No, yeah, yeah. Well, okay. So if I exercise more... I think I'd be better. Because also my back is kind of starting... I think my whole spine's starting what's the word I'm looking for?
Collapse?
Yeah, but also weld together. What's the word when things kind of... What's the word, Esther? People will write in because everyone, when we were, couldn't remember the word for... I can't remember it again.
I can't remember it and it's gone again for me.
Plug. No, it was...
Suppository.
And so many people like, the word you're looking for was suppository.
Yes.
And now the word I'm looking for is...
It's sort of melding. When it melds together.
When bones...
Susie, I think you just, as my mum used to say, you just need putting in a bag and shaking up.
I need putting in a bag and rolling down a hill.
Do you know what you need? You need putting in a sleeping bag at 10 o'clock at night and then getting a decent night's sleep. And then going for a run. And maybe some yoga if your spine's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also just chatting with you. So because that's my three. It's sleep, exercise and chat with Esther. And then I'm my best self.
That's so lovely.
Apart from today when I'm a bit weird.
You're not weird. You're delightful. We embrace all versions of the Sues.
We interrupt this programme with a you bash. Despite my best efforts, I continue to be myself. I'll keep trying. One day I may finally become me, but better. For the time being, my current best self is looking forward to enjoying a bottle of sherry and a classic Viennetta after work. All to myself. Goodbye. And thank you.
How do you make yourself your best?
Do you know,
bad self?
I totally agree with there are different versions of us for different. So sometimes I'm really hermity and I know that I'm a bit overwhelmed or whatever. And I really just have to turn my phone off and batten down the hatches because my brain is always whizzing very quickly with far too much in it. And
with Cliff Richard on roller skates, as I know.
Wired for sound. So sometimes I'm that person, but I'm my best self when I sort of when I could finish a sentence.
The best self. I did the arms again.
I was actually roboting a bit then. When I'm working, doing something I really love. So doing this with you, I love limited time only. I love it so much. Yeah. And having our chats and I'm always surprised that we've got so much to say to each other. Because my dad once said to me, oh, it's like you're just making it up on the spot. And I was like, Dad, we are. We're just having a chat.
It's all scripted, tightly scripted. Yes.
We're just thespians. This is even my little malfunction a few minutes ago was tightly scripted.
Oh, God.
But when I'm working, so when I'm doing this and I'm working with you, when I'm on set, oh my God. I mean, I did a film a few years ago, it's about 10 years ago now. And I filmed for a week and I got 17 hours sleep across the whole week. So I was so happy to be there that I remember wrapping early, finishing one night at about 10 or 11 o'clock. And they were filming through the night and I just stayed because I was so happy. And I was in a caravan with one of the makeup girls and we were just giggling, having to hide. And I just like being in those sort of environments, or when you're on stage or something and you're working on a project, I can be quite, I'm an overthinker, and that noise can be quite debilitating, I think, at times. So when you are doing something like that or doing this, none of those thoughts can come in. And so I love it. And I remember years ago, I compared a show at Edinburgh. And I went out with a beginning line, a middle line and an end line. I had to do these little middle, like these sections. And it was the most liberating thing I've ever done because I couldn't think of anything other than staying in character and what I might say next. There wasn't even a script to remember.
Yeah.
And it was so freeing because there was nothing to remember other than just be as funny as you can and just get out there. And it was good. And so I really... It took all the other noise in my head, like, oh, well, they probably think I look like this, or they might think I'm that, or I feel a bit bloated, or, oh, God, what if I fall on my face? You know, all went out of my head because I couldn't think of anything else. And that was so freeing.
Well, that's so interesting. And everything you just said then is really quite, slightly amusing, and you'll find out why in a second. Because okay. I wrote five words down to describe my best self. Obviously, there are different selves, but my best self I would describe as relaxed, confident, alert, enthusiastic, and not flatulent. And you'd said, I don't feel bloated. I'm so glad you said that.
I don't actually get bloated very often. I don't know why I said that, but... I meant, you know, when you feel a bit fat and stuff like that, you're not really thinking about that. But
it's that kind of, because when I'm nervous, I don't know about you, but like when I get nervous, like say if we're about to go on stage or whatever, I do get very, very flatulent.
I don't get flatulent, but I'm going to share something and I'm going to instantly regret sharing this.
We can always edit it out, love.
Yes. I have to go to the toilet immediately before I go on stage. Every time.
Oh, yeah.
Without fail.
Yeah. I have to do a PPP.
No, not a PPP.
I have to do a pre-performance poo.
Oh, pre-performance poo. Yeah, always, without fail. It's like the bowels go, it's almost like you're about to go into labour. Your bowels go, get rid of everything immediately.
It's you're emptying out anything that's unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a surprise we don't vomit as well. I mean, it's kind of it's like a stress reaction.
Yes.
I hope my friend doesn't mind me telling this story. I won't mention who it is, but she...
Is it Barry?
Barry. Shh. Sorry, Barry. Barretta.
Barretta.
She hurt herself. She like fell down some stairs and really hurt herself. I think she cut herself on something. And as she did it, I think she might have caught herself on a nail or something horrible. And as she did that, her bowels automatically emptied and she vomited. Because all the blood was having to go to the place where she cut herself. So it was like, this is what our bodies do.
Yes.
And I think if you do have like a...
visual.
Yeah, I know, sorry. But that's why it's doing it, because our body, we're kind of in shock almost.
Yeah.
And we're so nervous and frightened. But then that's that weird thing about, you know, actually that adrenaline. It's adrenaline.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It causes that, is that reaction. But that's the weird thing about being an actor, or I don't know, probably sports people have it as well. And anybody who's doing something where it's kind of, you're putting yourself on the line in some way. That nervousness and adrenaline is really what, why you do it. Because it's an absolute thrill. But also that nervousness, and it is a fear, but you kind of use it, you can use that, but it can be a complete barrier to being yourself as well, can't it?
Yes, yes, totally. I mean, the number of times I remember doing a play, it's longer than I think, but stepping onto stage and standing next to Greg, one of the actors, and going, we're both looking at each other going, why do we do this? And then stepping across the line and going, oh, okay. And then within 30 seconds, you're fine. But that feeling, that lead up to it is so horrible, and you just feel so sick. Well,
it's the worry about what's going to happen, isn't it? And so and once you've, you know, am I going to forget my lines? Is everyone going to think I'm terrible? Am I going to fall over? Is the other actor going to be as crap as they were in rehearsal? That kind of thing.
Yes.
I'm only joking. But it's once you're doing it, you're kind of stepping onto this roller coaster, and it's happening. But I was thinking about what, you know, because we're being, that idea of being nervous about something, it's generally because we're bothered about what other people think about us. But actually, we have to remember that most of the time, people are just thinking about themselves.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And also, when it comes to performances, I have this nerves, but it's almost like a lack of trust in yourself, because then if something does go wrong, I'm so good in a crisis. So good, but I'll worry about what could potentially happen. And then when you get, not too much, I wouldn't say I'm a huge worrier. I'm not a fussy person, and I cannot bear being fussed. I can't bear it. If somebody's like, oh, you've got a cold, where did you get that from?
Ooh,
I'm like,
Esther,
oh, bugger
right,
off. Oh, I'm like, oh, bugger off. Leave me alone. I'm not very good with being first, you don't look very well, are you? I'm like, just do one. I suppose I don't like the attention of it, actually. But actually, whenever there is a crisis, I'm great. And that's what you have to hold on to, isn't it? That I'm really...
There's no point worrying, because whatever happens, you will be able to deal with it.
No, exactly. Although, if I didn't worry before I went on stage, I'd probably worry. Because I think, where are the nerves? Where are the nerves? They're not there. They're not there. I also love meeting new people. I like meeting new people, and I find that quite stimulating. And again, I tend to get into a bit of a flow. I'm not very good with small talk, but if I meet somebody and I something in me kicks in. And I think what's nice about meeting new people is they don't have a preconceived idea of who you are. So sometimes I'm very, like you say, we're different people around different people. So I'm often quite exuberant and effusive. Yeah. But if I'm quiet on that day, I can be quiet and nobody will think anything, because they won't.
No one's going to go, oh, we have to be a bit quiet.
Yeah, you're all right. No, leave me alone. I'm fine. I'm just quieter. And so I like that. I like that when you meet somebody new, it's like a fresh canvas. And because we all change a lot through our lives, don't we? And sometimes people that you've known for years will sort of think, I don't know, you almost revert back to how you were when you're now a different person. And so I love meeting new people. And I also am very good after I've meditated or done breath work.
Oh, nice.
I get a lot of clarity after I've done that.
Yeah.
Lots of clarity.
I was thinking I'm much happier when I've blow-dried and straightened my hair.
Oh,
which
yes!
Less spiritual.
No, but it's...
But,
yeah, when my skin's great, because I have so many weird little flare-ups of skin and things for the last few years. When my skin's great, I just feel so much more relaxed and confident, because almost that I feel like I've got to hide my face away a bit when it's sore, or because I'm aware people will look at it. So it makes me very self-conscious. So when your hair's great or your skin's great, and you just walk with a little strut. Little skip and a hop. And it's what would you like to be better at?
Life. I honestly would like to be better at going to sleep.
Yeah.
I am absolutely shocking. And and it happened today. I mean, I stayed up past midnight last night.
Yeah.
And if I just went to bed at 10:30, I would be fine. But why don't I? Why?
Yeah.
It's so annoying. I've actually bought a course of hypnotherapy.
Oh, really? Well,
but for no reason whatsoever, other than it was advertised to me on Instagram. And in a moment of weakness. No, I bought it. I didn't spend very much money at all, by the way.
You don't need to caveat or justify.
No, I do need to caveat because my husband might be listening.
Oh, okay. It was nothing. It was nothing.
It wasn't much. And I just thought, I'll get this 3-month course. And it's for helping with procrastination. Because one of the things I procrastinate about is sleep. And so it's a every week they send a meditation. But it's hypnotherapy, but it kind of feels like a meditation, really. I mean, largely what it's just going to do is send me to sleep every time I listen to it, because that's what happens if I'm lying down. So probably that's quite good. But I'm hoping that will help. So I'll keep you updated, because I've never done that before. I've done meditation, but the point of meditation is not to make yourself fall asleep, is it? It's meant to be kind of, you're kind of focused. But I have no idea. So I thought, I'll just give it a go and see what happens. So maybe I'll get better at it. I just think it would just change my life. And I've been saying this ever since we started the podcast in 2021 and I haven't done anything about it yet.
It's obviously a block though, isn't it? Because the fact that there's obviously something going on. I find exercise trickier. I find it hard to commit to exercise, and I want to, but then I don't do it. But it's almost like it's not what your body knows, so your body tries to keep you in the same routine. So
yes,
I hope
yes.
the hypnosis works, because I actually, the only time I've done hypnosis was when I was pregnant with my daughter, I remember doing it, and I had a hypnosis CD.
Yes, what's that called? Hypnobirthing.
Hypnobirthing.
I did that, actually. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I did do that.
And when I was in labour, I lost... I remember asking my husband to put it on.
Lost your mind.
And I lost my mind. I lost my mind. I was cartwheeling around the bus. I remember the CD starting, and then I felt like I blinked, and then it ended. And I went, what? And it was 45 minutes.
Oh,
and I
wow.
said, put it on again. And then it started. And then again, it felt like I blinked. And then
it
had ended.
Meanwhile, your husband and the midwives were banging their heads against the wall. Yeah. Going, I can't listen to this again.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But I hope it works for you, because I think it's really hard when you've got a block about something that you really want to do, because you end up almost shaming yourself and being angry with yourself about it and going, oh, for God's sake, why can't I do this? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But so I hope this works for you, because
I tell you, I will keep you posted. But I'm just thinking about exercise, and the way I've been getting myself to exercise is, so January, I did the 40 miles in January for the Royal Marsden Cancer Society. In March, I'm running 62 miles for cancer research, which is 2 miles a day. And honestly, it's the only way, because I am answerable to all the people who are sponsoring me, including myself. I've sponsored myself. I want to raise that money. And it's a real amazing motivator to do something. I mean, even if you said, right, I'm gonna ask my 5 friends to sponsor me £5 or something for this charity. And then I'm going to do 1 workout a week. And you have to sort of say, yeah, okay, I've done it today. And we'll be like, great.
Do you know, as well, I was doing yoga with Adrian, but I was doing it so infrequently. And then I signed up to this thing called The Class, which I absolutely love. And I am managing to do that a couple of times a week. But somebody told me once, people who pay attention. So if you get something for free, you go, it doesn't matter, I can do it on another day. Whereas I'm paying for this and it's a monthly thing, and you can do the classes online. And I think I spoke about it before, yoga and somatic stuff and Pilates and exercise. But I am, it's on my mind a lot. Oh, I must do a class. And when I do one, I love it.
Yeah.
And
it's the same with anything. It's the same with like going to see I'm going to do a performance.
Yeah.
I've been working on it for, 3 months. It's totally free to come. No bugger's going to come.
No, they're not. They're not.
They don't, it's not, well, why is it free? It's obviously not a value.
Exactly.
Kind of
and also, if, and also when I had a play on, I find that if I book something, then I'll do it. But if I don't have a deadline, I won't do it. So yeah. Like you with the running, I'll run if there's a, if I've got to do it. That's your motivator. I'm doing it for the charity. It's about somebody else. It's not about doing it for yourself. Maybe we should set up a sleep thing that you have to sleep for your kids. That's the thing, I don't know.
Well, it is really for them, because this morning, that's actually a really, really brilliant thing you've said, Esther.
Thanks.
That I've never, ever, I mean, although I've been saying, you know, the charity, you know, running for charity, I've not actually framed it as I am running for somebody else.
Yes.
That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I've just sort of seen it as it's motivating me. So framing sleep as doing it for my children is completely brilliant, because this morning I was such a grumpy old cow that I was really horrible to my kids. And I feel terrible about that now. they were being a bit annoying. But but yeah, I'm doing it for the kids. Maybe I should play that Kylie and jump on board.
Go to sleep.
Go to sleep. Yeah. The kids will be all right. When you've had a good night's sleep, go to sleep, you silly grumpy cow. Yeah.
I think that's key. You know, I think the key is work out what's going to motivate you to do it. And with most things, it's I heard James Corden being interviewed, and he said that he wasn't really drinking anymore, and he said the reason was taking too much out of his life, and his friend had stopped drinking, and he said, why have you stopped drinking? And he said, well, I just ask myself, how much do I want to borrow from tomorrow? And I thought, that's really good. You know, I'm not going to feel well till lunchtime, so I'm going to lose 12 hours from tomorrow because I'm not going to feel well till lunchtime. So I'm borrowing. It's like a debt from the next day.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. This is the last 2 minutes of this chat have sort of probably changed my life.
I hope so. How ace would that be?
It would be ace.
It would be amazing. It would be
amazing. Check on me tomorrow when I've stayed up till 2 a.m.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We better sign off because this is a 31-minute conversation. And listeners, we tried to keep it to 20 minutes because
it's top quality. This is top quality.
This is top quality shizzle.
Top quality jazz.
It's hilarious.
Let's go. I've got
and
to
it's
go.
Informative.
It's informative and entertaining. We are like the BBC. We inform and educate all the time. What's the other one? Inform, educate.
I don't know.
Hang on. Educate.
Stimulate, titivate.
BBC, titivate. I do need some help today. It's because I have not had enough sleep. So, yeah, I'll go and get some, and I'll see you back here in 2 years.
Brilliant. Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.
Suze, can we start the meeting now? We've been sat here for 20 minutes.
Sorry, I can't decide which of my bright disposition notebooks to use. Do I want to dream big and go for my dreamy navy blue notebook? Or do I want to shine bright with a notebook in luscious bright pink? LTO colours.
They're beautiful, but why have you got 5?
They all made me so happy I had to buy the full range. Plus, I'm down with the company ethos. Bright Disposition is a small family business and each notebook has been designed with love.
Let me have a look.
Here you go.
Oh, a hard-wearing cover.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous colours. A lovely band to keep them shut.
Yeah.
A ribbon to keep your place.
And top quality paper that my pen glides over and doesn't seep through. I think I'm in love. Okay, I'm feeling sunny, so I'm going for the sky blue. We can start the meeting now, Esther. Esther!
Oh, sorry. I'm just on Etsy ordering stationery from Bright Disposition. There's an LTO discount code for 10% off. I'll be with you in a mo.
No rush. I'm stroking my notebooks.
Bright Disposition. Uplifting gifts to encourage and inspire you. Available from Etsy. And for LTO listeners, there's 10% off. Just use the code LTO10 at checkout. If Susie and Esther haven't bought them all already. Mum, there's another big box from Bright Disposition here.
Woke up before 6:30 with the cat sat on my head. My two kids started fighting early. I check the iPads and go back to bed.
Woo!
No time for YouTube yoga, to have a shower or brush my hair. My morning routine consists of coffee, sertraline and a cathartic swear. The Insta feed is showing me all my successful mates. The mirror's showing me I look about 608. And I drop my kids off late again. Why is this so hard? I'm living my hashtag best life. I always feel dog tired. I'm living my hashtag best life. Social media twist the knife. Who's really living their hashtag best life? Not me. On hold to the doctors. Been on since 8 o'clock. Knocked on my iPhone camera. My morning face is quite a shock. Went off to weekly Zumba. Quite fancy the teacher Ross. Stupidly wore grey leggings, which shows off my sweaty crotch. Need to clean the toilet and make the house look spick and span. But the dog shat on the carpet and now I'm swollen on the gram. With a glass of wine in hand. Sod off!
Why is this so hard? We're living our hashtag best life. Adulthood has left us scarred. We're living our hashtag best life. Fake perfection is this year's zeitgeist. Who's really living their hashtag best life?
I think of myself as a patron of the arts. I buy theatre tickets. Encore! I attend cinematic presentations.
Can I see some ID, madam? This is a 12 certification.
Oh, blast. And I adore a good art exhibition. Who's this by? It's just blobs.
Picasso?
Oh. But it's only now that I can call myself a true patron. As I've become a patron of Limited Time Only podcast, my support enables Susie and Esther to make LTO the best it can be and gets me bonus content and experiences I don't want to miss. I've just signed up for the first patron-only LTO live online. To sign up, go to patreon.com and search for Limited Time Only podcast. There's a link in the show notes and in the LTO Instagram bio. I'll see you over there. I'm just off to the opera. Toodaloo!
Rosie's here. Rosie's here. Rosie's here. Everybody cheer. Woo! I hope she heard that.
I did. I do like a little cheer in the morning.
Totally improvised, that was, Rosie.
This week's guest is journalist, beauty editor, author, broadcaster and all-round ray of light, Rosie Green. Rosie has spent the last 20 years writing about beauty, fashion, spas and health, and interviewing and styling major Hollywood celebrities from Sarah Jessica Parker to Cameron Diaz. She regularly writes for The Telegraph, The Times, Vogue and Elle, and, up until recently, had her own column about her personal life in the Daily Mail's You magazine. She's basically Carrie Bradshaw. She is also a regular guest presenter on This Morning. After her 26-year relationship with her husband ended without warning, Rosie took her pain and turned it into a best-selling book, How to Heal a Broken Heart. A book that has helped and inspired many people going through separations to feel less alone and more positive about their futures. We talked to Rosie about how she landed her first break at Vogue, working for Trini and Susanna, the skincare she would recommend, and her passion for authentic communication. Welcome to the show, Rosie Green.
Oh, it's so nice to meet you both.
And you. You've had such and are having such an incredible career. I mean, you've worked for Elle, Vogue, The Times, The Telegraph, You magazine, presented on This Morning. You've got your own podcast. You've launched a fantastic book. How did your career start?
So I, you know, went to a sort of very normal comp in Birmingham, and I remember sort of trying to decide what I wanted to do. And I thought, oh, I'll be a lawyer. I would have been a terrible lawyer. And just sort of realising that that wasn't really a door that was open to me. And then I remember the careers advice saying, I think you'd make a really good prison guard, which I think lots of people, they say that all the time, obviously. I remember thinking, I'm not sure that's quite me, but I always loved magazines. And so when I went to university, I entered the Vogue writing competition. I didn't really think anything of it. And they sent me a letter saying they'd shortlisted me. And I'd applied to go to do Camp America, which was quite a big deal for me. I know, like, all my kids and all my kids' friends were all off on gap years and stuff. But, you know, for me, that felt like a massive deal to leave my hometown and to go, you know. So I'd signed up to that. And then they'd sort of said they'd shortlisted me, but I just thought, well, I haven't got hope in hell of that. So I went off to Camp America, and while I was with some kids, like, down on the beach, some guy, like, ran all the way from the top of the camp and said, "Hey, ma'am, there's a woman called Alexandra Shulman on the phone for you." And I was like, oh my God. So literally 10 minutes up the hill, I got there, and she said, "You know, you've won this Vogue competition," which was amazing. And it was all, you know, that was like my entry into it. Interestingly, I got to Vogue and I very quickly realized that, you know, I wasn't titled. You know, I went into a sort of very far from being titled, and I went into their sort of HR interview, and they asked me what my mum did, what my dad did, what school I went to. You know, it's quite interesting, you know, there are lots of sort of barriers, and that was the first time I realized that that was a barrier. So I then went to Elle after that and just kind of, I don't know, just loved it and worked my way up, really.
What was the article that you wrote for Vogue for the competition?
It was an autobiography, which is ironic, considering I was like 18. And yeah, it was a sort of coming of age teenage story, really, which was, you know, which obviously touched them in some way. And then I wrote about, like, really scary shop assistants. I had to write two things. So then I wrote about a really, really scary shop assistants. You know, it's that kind of Pretty Woman era of when you went into a shop and they kind of deeply looked down your nose at you, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are the two pieces I wrote. And then I did a month's work experience there. And I was just petrified every day. Every day I called my mum in tears. But, it was what I wanted to do. I cut a lot of people off on the phone because I was terrible.
Was it like Devil Wears Prada?
It was 100% like Devil Wears Prada. And
really?
And then when I went to Elle, it was the same. I don't think they're not like that anymore, magazines, because they've just, you know, there's so much less kind of money in them, I think. But yeah, it really was. You know, there's a fashion cupboard and there's presents coming in from the editors all day. And, you know, there's a sort of model crying in the loo because she can't get into the outfit. And, you know, it really was Devil Wears Prada. And, I did all the shows. I just absolutely loved it.
And did you start straight away in beauty?
No, I wanted to do fashion. So I was a fashion assistant. And I love that because, you know, I got to go to, like, I remember going to Morocco on a shoot. I mean, I remember I was always making my daughter laugh because I went on one of Charlotte Tilbury's first ever trips. And she, it was her, like, she was a rookie and I was a rookie, and we had to share a room. She smoked like a chimney at the time. And I just remember she would call for, like, room service, and she didn't know French. I didn't really know much French. She'd go, "Hello, I would like a cappuccino." You know, just because you say it in the accent does not mean they're going to, you know, dig it up. But yeah, so I wanted to do fashion, but I quickly realised that actually I was a writer and there were many more writing opportunities in beauty.
That's so fascinating. So was fashion your passion originally then?
Yeah, fashion was my passion. And no, we've got a mutual friend, Kelly, that I went to school with and you knew growing up. Like, I mean, she would tell you that I would go out to the clubs in, like, the most ridiculous outfits. Like, we'd be getting into fights all the time, all around Birmingham. People would be like, "What are you wearing?" and try to start a fight. I'd wear, like, things out, you know. So yeah, passion was my fashion, but passion was my passion. But then I quite quickly realised that I liked the world of beauty, and I'm such a guinea pig. I'll just try anything.
Well, thanks to you, because I get really sensitive skin, and it's got a lot worse since I turned 40. But I saw a video that you did with a dermatologist about rosacea and stuff like that. And I actually went to that dermatologist, and they did really help me with my skin, because Susie and I were talking about this before you came on. It's such a minefield, because you're hearing so many people recommend different things, and it's really hard to find just the nugget of information that you need. And so actually that video that you did with Dr. Stephanie Williams, yes, I think it is, from Udello. Yeah. And I thought, right, okay, because I tried so many products over the years, and I went straight to Udello. So it's so important to have a voice that you know that you can trust. And how do you find being a guinea pig? Because I know you do sometimes have sensitive skin. Does your skin still flare?
Yeah, it does. And do you know what? I realise quite quickly if I go off piece. Well, Dr. Williams always just says, you know, put your skin on a diet. And actually, I mean, I am. Oh, I mean, maybe I should show you the amount that I get sent each day. It is unbelievable. And I just have to be really, careful. And I use hardly anything really. It's a really boring regime. And every so often someone will say, oh, come for a facial. And actually, you know, we know all about rosacea. It's going to be fine. And I go and I almost always regret it. So it's just like the most boring skincare regime I use. And I might switch around to cleanser. But, you know, I've learned things like, you know, I just can't use, even though you think it would be really good, like those lovely smelling cleansing balms and things. It has to be very sort of pharmaceutical or clinical, or, you know, those brands like La Roche-Posay, which, you know, I get sent such beautiful smelling glossy packaging, but I just have to resist them. And I think with someone like Dr. Williams, I know that the initial price is just so, you know, for a lot of people, including myself, that's a massive consideration. But actually the amount of money you then just spend if you are throwing random stuff at your skin all the time, I think it is worth the spend.
I scroll through Instagram and I'm getting so many things about... well, a lot of collagen stuff. And I've actually bought collagen because Davina McCall recommended it on Instagram. But I'm seeing Emma Willis recommending another one. I'm like, well, I like Emma Willis as well. Which collagen should I go for? But lots and lots of things, and people who aren't famous at all, telling me about sort of creams put under the eye, and I'm watching it firm up, and then I'm like, I click on the link, buy now. I'm like,
there's something
cheap.
Called Bad Bunny or Skin Bunny or something, isn't there?
Yes,
under the eyes. I think collagen's a really interesting one. I'm quite on the fence with that because having interviewed lots of people, some people swear by it. You know, obviously Emma Willis is being paid, but she's also a really nice woman. I don't think she would do it if she didn't feel like she got a certain amount of benefit from it. I feel like the jury's out. So I feel like if you've got the money, you want to spend it, you want to try it, you know, do it. I don't, everything I've heard is it can do no harm, but I'm still not 100% convinced on it, I have to say.
Yeah. And do you think that generally there are more beauty products out there because the ease of advertising to us? We like sort of drip fed.
I don't know if there's more. I mean, I've just always had so much sent to me. I just think we're bombarded in a different way. So, you know, like 20 years ago, you would buy, you know, two magazines a month. So you would limit how much you were bombarded with it. And, you know, the thing about magazines is obviously there is an advertiser pressure. But ultimately, when I was working on them, you know, if I don't know, Oil of Olay, which isn't even called that anymore, is it Olay, wanted to advertise and they were like, okay, well, we're advertising, we feel like we should have a presence in the magazine. If that was going to happen, someone from ads would come up and they'd sort of creep up to your desk, they go, look, I'm very sorry, I don't want to compromise your editorial integrity, could you have a look at this, is there any way it's going to go in, you know? And so it would almost be like the editor would be, you know, that they would protect you from that kind of pressure. Whereas now I think the lines are so blurred between advertising and who's advocating for what. And, you know, so I think probably you're getting more sell, and also it's much harder to work out who is giving you real advice.
Yes, because it's often paired up with a doctor with no surname.
Yes.
Dr. Mary. I'm like, well, who the hell is Dr. Mary? What's she a doctor of?
I know. And I think it's so interesting, that whole world of beauty, because, you know, obviously part of it is unicorn. You know, we know that, we buy into it. We know by putting a fragrance on, it's not like we're suddenly going to walk down the street and all the men are going to follow us. But equally, it feels lovely to us. It empowers, you know, we enjoy it. It's one of life's things. So it's always this kind of grey area. So I'm always sort of a bit compromised, and I was thinking the other day that TikTok and Instagram, because they play to our brain's algorithms, we really like, don't we, definitive yes or no. So if someone goes, this is the best product ever, it's going to change your life, then you're like, oh. Whereas as a beauty journalist, I'm probably never going to say that. I'm going to say this, I think, is a really good product if you have a certain kind of skin type and you can afford to buy it in this racket and blah, blah. So it's almost like it gets rid of all the sort of nuance, the social media angle of it.
Yeah. I think as well, when you're when you get to a certain age and suddenly beauty products take on a whole new relevance.
Yeah.
So previously I'd be like, right, does this moisturise my skin? Great. I don't really care what I'm putting on my face because I have, you know, under 30s skin. Yeah. That's lovely. But now I'm, you know, 45 and I'm like, well, what can, oh God, right, what is going to lift this thing? And they're quite specific needs that you have. And you, yes, you do want someone to go, there's a magic wand you can buy for £25.
Yeah.
And it will make you look young again. That, so yeah, that, just saying that just sort of made me think about that kind of the potency of beauty advertising and products for as you age, really.
Yeah, and I think that whole sort of tweakments arena, it's like how much do you want to spend, how much do you want to do, you know, like, yes, I think, you know, consistency with skincare can make a difference, certainly with an SPF, but you know, the real differences are going to be those tweakments. But it's like, how much do you want to do? Do you want to do it at all? You know, then you've got to like trade that off with like, I don't want to look weird. So there's a whole, you know, like, I'm sort of, it's like, yes, these, that, you know, a retinol, you know, I've heard a million times, you know, retinol is brilliant, blah, blah. Have I consistently been able to use a retinol? Not really, because it's too reactive on my skin most of the time.
And that's it. I think that's what I struggled with, because I had eczema a lot as a child, didn't really have it from my 20s and 30s, and then hit 40 and suddenly became allergic to a lot of things. And I was trying so many different products and getting through so many different things. And like you say, just throwing loads of money at it and things that were so somebody I knew worked for a company, well, Tropic, and which was supposed to be great, but actually it turns out I'm very reactive to plant stuff. So yes, anything with aloe vera, which is in loads of stuff, is really bad for me. And she'd go, but there's nothing in it, it shouldn't, all plant stuff is good, you shouldn't be reacting to plant stuff. And I'm like, well, it hurts.
Yeah, I'm really
it
sorry.
I'm really sorry, but it hurts, and I've just spent 30 quid on this, and now I'm going to give it to my mother-in-law. And it's really hard to know. And like you were saying with your skin, you have to go quite clinical. And when people go to me, but it's got a planting, I go, I probably can't use it then, you're gonna have, yeah, to give me something that's been manufactured. Yes. And then I'll be okay.
100%.
And it's really hard.
I just interviewed a dermatologist and she said the exact same thing. People think natural is good, but yeah, actually and I think it's so interesting that you know, in your 40s, because your skin, you know, your skin naturally starts working less well, and so your skin barrier is less efficient. So actually, yeah, because before, if you were putting Tropic on it, it might I've just dealt with that. Now it won't. It'll get irritated and reactive and all that stuff will go in. And then the cycle means you're then like, oh my God, my skin's flaring up, I need to throw loads more on it. So you're in that kind of vicious circle of actually you just have to step back quite often. And I just think, can you know, find what works for you, stick with it. It's consistency. It's a bit boring. You know, a vitamin C in the morning, a vitamin C serum in the morning. If you can handle it, a retinol at night, sunscreen, you know, and then the stuff that's tailored to you. Like if you're, you know, if you are someone that suffers with pigmentation, you might want niacinamide, you know, if you're someone that needs mega hydration, you might want hyaluronic acid. So it's just about finding what your skin needs, sticking to it and being regular.
I find as well now that with my skin, and I don't know if you are both the same, but I'll have about a week in the month when I look about 15 and my skin is plump and dewy and looks amazing. And then the next week I look about 65 and my eyes are suddenly really crepey. Everything's flaking and I'm thinking, what happened to me? And I'll meet people sometimes and they'll go, have you had some work done? And I'll say, no, it's just, I'm having a good week. I don't know where my hormones are at, but this is when I look my best. But do you both find that you just, some weeks you look ancient and some weeks you look amazing?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously I look amazing.
Always.
I mean, I have to say, a sort of puffy, I think a lot of it's water, yeah, dehydration.
Also, sometimes related. I think I was just doing my I was just doing my David Gandy research, so I'm talking to him later, and he was talking about salt, and he was saying, and I've heard this from lots of models, that if you have lots of salt, your face like hangs on to so much, it bloats basically. And so if you have a salty, you know, takeaway or something the night before, you will look a lot puffier, you know, than you would normally. But I agree, it's probably how much estrogen you've got in your skin at any, like when you feel great. And this is why I do think beauty is important, because I think we can think of it as, like, I think sometimes if you've had your nails done, which doesn't affect like how you look to the rest of the world, really, if you're walking down the street, you know, sometimes you'll just have like this spring in your step and you'll notice you might be turning a few heads, or your friends say, oh, you look amazing. And I think that's because it's how you feel, like you've invested in yourself. You've had a bit of time to yourself. And so I just think, to me, that's the power of beauty. It sort of maybe slightly changes how you look, but it changes how you feel. And then you project that to the wider world.
Totally. Absolutely. Totally.
I think that with makeup, just even putting makeup on.
Yeah.
I'm like, how has this woken me up?
Yeah.
Why do I feel more awake? Because I've just, nothing's changed. Yeah. I've just put some stuff on my face. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we have got there's a question from a listener, which I think I'll just drop in now because it's relevant. But I'm realising it's quite hard to answer because it is a very personal thing.
Yeah.
Beauty. You can only recommend so much. But she's turned 50 last year, and she wanted to ask you if she had, you know, £50 plus to spend on a product. She's about to help with wrinkles.
Okay.
Is there a specific brand or product that you would recommend?
Well, certainly I think retinol is the, you know, retinol is the anti-wrinkle product that is proven to work. I'm assuming she's using a sunscreen because, I mean, yeah, the stats for, you know, aging in terms of that is just massive. Like, there's no point doing anything unless you're putting that on. And that is every day all throughout the winter. So find one that you like. So, yeah, I would say a retinol product. At the moment, I'm using, there's a brand called Environ that are generally sold in kind of clinics and spas. And I think they've got an active levels of retinol, but are still very tolerable, I think. And I find that that's very easy to use. There's one called, it's called Vitamin C Quench. And then, I don't know, they sell them in a two. Might have to go up and find it for you in a minute. And I can use those every night. And I think that makes a massive difference. Other than that, I would look at Beauty Pie. I think is really good. If you sign up for that, you get, you know, I really trust Marcia Kilgore, who set up Bliss and things. She puts really good ingredients in there. And if you sign up for their beauty club, they're really reasonable, those products.
Oh, that's great.
I do like that Boots Protect, and, you know, their brand new on Future Renew or whatever. I think that's probably got some really good stuff in. And then brands like Murad and things like that, I think, are really good.
Fantastic. That's for Annabelle.
Hope
you've written all that down, Annabelle.
I've been making notes as well, because I'm looking at your skin, Rosie, and I'm like, my God, that is beautiful skin.
Oh, thank you.
I've
put quite a lot of brush on. I tell you what, though, I do suffer for my, I don't know whether you can see on that, the scar, the things on my neck. I just went and had this sort of, you know, like everyone always says, oh, it's your neck that goes first. So this treatment on my neck. Oh, so many injections. It was like, but.
Oh, wow. What did you have?
Well, it's called, it's this product called Radies, which is like, traditionally has been a filler, but it's actually, it's not a filler, it's a sort of collagen stimulator. So they sort of inject it deep in, and it's meant to like trigger your collagen to kickstart. So I'll let you know, it's going to take 3 months, so I'll let you know. But it was
the neck of a 20-year-old.
Well, yeah. It's like, I was like, oh no, I'm turning into Deirdre Barlow.
We'll have Polar X on. That's the best thing, I think.
I always find them weird. Like, yeah, I'm in some kind of shadow theatre production. I don't
like
know.
Holly,
just a floating head.
Yeah. I do have a polar neck. And my boyfriend, oh, should I get this polar neck? And I was sort of thinking, okay, I can't just keep going back into my past. But I love man in a polar neck. So I was always trying to convince my ex-husband to wear one. And when he was my husband, not now he's an ex. He would sort of rarely submit to it because he used to get so hot, like he'd be like, oh my God. So when my boyfriend was like, I'm going to buy a polo neck, I was like, okay, do I tell him that this has happened before but was unsuccessful? I thought, no, I'm just going to see, you know, how different it goes. So he got it on, he looks really handsome, and then he's like, oh God. I was like, thought that might happen. Oh,
just for outdoor activities.
Exactly.
So it's not just beauty you write about, and because I was like, oh my god, it's just travel and relationships and style. What's your kind of, I don't know, is there any area that you particularly love more than any other? I mean, travel must be pretty cool.
Travel's brilliant. I mean, travel's just sort of, that's just fun and it's really nice to do. It's not like that's my, I think I love writing about relationships. So I used to write a column for Red for 10 years called Life's Rosie, and it was about my sort of young family and, you know, included my ex in and my two kids when they were little, and, you know, it's those kind of crazy years where your sort of car's stuck together with raisins, you know what I mean? And there's,
yeah, I'm still there.
One particular nadir moment when I was sort of trying to maintain the illusion of being a sort of career woman as well. And I'd done that thing where I'd been so tired the night before, I pulled my trousers and my knickers off at the same time. And then the next morning I thought, oh, I'm just going to wear those trousers again. I did obviously put my pants on. And so I put my fresh pants on, put the trousers back on, went to Elle for a meeting, was in the meeting, stood up and thought, I've just fallen out of my trousers leg. And it was my pants from the night before. And I just, it was those kind of moments that if you've got young kids, you just know that is what like life is about. So I loved writing those. And I got a lot of, feedback and people really react to them in a way with beauty. It's almost like, you know, they're asking you questions, it's sort of quite professional, but in that they're like, oh my god, that happened to me too, you know, that's made me laugh so much. So I do like writing those. And then I just recently, for like two and a bit years, wrote a column for You magazine, The Mail on Sunday, about like dating, you know, getting back into the dating scene, and then like, you know, my new relationship. And so that was quite funny, but it was giving my boyfriend a cardiac every Sunday morning, so I thought, I need to stop it. But 5 million readers reading about me this week. Oh my god,
you're like Carrie Bradshaw.
You are like Carrie Bradshaw. Did you love Sex and the City?
I loved Sex and the City. I was quite a late adopter. I remember everyone going on about it and me thinking, I don't know what you're talking about. No, I did really love that. And I do, what I loved about it at the time is, you know, they talked about things that, you know, people didn't talk about before. And then I remember right at the end, you know, Samantha was wearing all the like menopause patches and things. So they were just really, so I love writing slightly shocking things. And I always think it's not a good piece unless I feel slightly scared when I send it.
Yeah, that's, I think they say that, don't they, about writing, just write the stuff that makes you nervous, because that's what engages you. And like you say, we all relate to that. We, you know, it's quite refreshing to know, oh, I'm not the only person who has dirty knickers drop out my bottom of my trousers in a meeting. I still read magazines, but there's so few of them now, and it's sort of, I'm quite concerned for it really, because there's nothing quite like being at an airport or a train station picking up a magazine. And it must be quite hard for young journalists, and we have had a question from a young woman, Lucy, asking about how you would get, what you would recommend about how someone could get into journalism now.
I agree. I find it so, it's such a shame, because I think we all do really like those pieces where you can really relate to something. You really, you know, it's a like 1,000-word read. You know, at the end of it, you feel like you've engaged with them. You've thought a bit more about stuff. You've got that like, oh, that's happened to me too, all that sort of stuff. And I think now, where are those long reads? And I mean, I've almost stopped writing for magazines because, quite frankly, they can't pay. You know, they can't pay, or it's so little that they can pay. So, you know, effectively the magazines now are full of people either promoting their own books, fine, or whatever, or they're very young staffers writing it. And, you know, as we said, that, you know, they're compromised on the editorial because of they need the advertising spend. So I think it's really hard to know. And then equally, even though digital's so important, you know, the digital arm of anything, so the digital arm of Red or the digital arm of Elle or Glamour or even the digital arm of our, you know, our magazine is populated by very young people who aren't paid brilliantly. So it's like, how do they get that sort of voice? And also, how do they learn? Like, I feel I learned my craft, you know. This is not a very positive answer. I think, you know, I feel that on the positive side, it was a very closed, gated thing that you had to work for like 3 years to even get a foot in the door for free. And, you know, it was quite sort of, you know, you had to look a certain way and you had to sound a certain way and you had to follow this, you know, whereas now I think it is much more diverse, you know, and actually you can self-publish all the time. So I think if I was to say to someone how to get in it, I think you have to create your own brand. You have to decide what you stand for. You have to work on your tone of voice. You have to practice writing. I'd say, you know, still it's worth getting a credible, well-known name or brand behind you. Yes, go and work for Glamour, go and work for Sheer Lux, you know, go and work for one of the newspaper supplements if you can. But yeah, equally, you just have to keep working, keep and work out what engages with people.
Mm. That's really good advice. I mean, I think that and that I when you were saying that, I was like, well, this applies to young actors as well. It's okay. Really, you have to be prepared to make your own work because it's oversubscribed with acting. Yeah. I think there's more channels. It's kind of the opposite problem, but there's kind of less work. It sort of dissipates.
And particularly for the actors now, you know, is there an element of, you know, casting? I mean, there's a guy who works around here, you know, casting on people's numbers as yeah. well, you know, like, okay, you know, if we're doing a short film and it's a bit indie, you know, if we've got someone with 100,000 followers and then we've got someone with no followers, then the 100,000 followers is going to, yeah. you know, going to get more eyeballs yeah, on it,
definitely.
Right?
People say it doesn't yeah. matter, but absolutely does.
It is, and it's a shame really, because a lot of, I think particularly with actors, you don't necessarily want everybody to know about your personal life or create a brand. Yeah. It's so much more work. You just want to write your stuff or tell your stuff or perform, and also as actors you want people to be able to project a different role, like Sarah Lancashire. She's very yeah. private, and she's fortunately been in the business long enough that she can do that, but now it's a business, and you've got to be able to pull people in, and they need the numbers, and it's just a totally different game.
Yeah, and you're right, and that doesn't necessarily or doesn't really equate with someone, as you say, who can channel a different character each time, and also, you know, isn't a kind of salesman of themselves. Yeah. You know, they're actually, you know, sensitive and empathetic and, you know, open to all this stuff, which isn't really probably the ballsy person on like The Apprentice.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Do you think, I was just thinking about personalities suddenly, and I was thinking about Trini Woodall and people who advertise their own products, which for me kind of gives it an authenticity. I really don't buy anything. So I'm kind of get really sucked into it. So I follow, you know, Trini comes up on Instagram and I'm like, oh, that looks really great. Haven't bought any of her stuff, but maybe I will. And the other person is, Jones Road things.
Oh, Bobby Brown.
Bobby Brown. And so I'm kind of obsessed with this creamy blusher stuff.
Oh, the Miracle Blur.
I'm like, that looks great, but is it?
Yeah. But you know what? Weirdly, I don't really get on with that, but I think a lot of people do. Trini was one of my first bosses.
Oh, right.
So I know. So when I got to Elle, when I first went there, she was there, and so was Susanna. And I don't know what they were doing. Were they like guest editing? I don't know what they were doing. Anyway, they were there.
And like Patsy and Eddie.
Exactly. And they went off somewhere, and then they messaged me about like, you know, a month later and said, oh, we're doing this. They had a Telegraph column at the time. Will you come and work for us? So, oh my God, I trotted off to like Trini's flat in South Kent. I mean, they were hilarious. Also, they were kind of disruptors because everyone else was this sort of like towing the line, and, you know, you'd get your products in, you'd write about them. They were mainly fashion, and they were just like, well, this is shit. You know, I was like, oh my God, I'm not sure you can see. So I'd be like building all this stuff from like the really head honcho at Chanel ringing up, just getting so cross. And I would basically walk their dogs. And they had these two like pound dogs. And every day I'd walk to Rotisserie Jules, I think it was called, and buy them a fucking chicken to eat, these dogs. I was on like baked beans and things. But they were great bosses, I have
oh,
to
that's
say.
Nice.
And she used to brief me from the loo. She'd like be in the, I don't know whether she was shouting, I don't know what she was doing in there, but she'd just shout her instructions through the door. I mean, she's like wildly energetic. I mean, she must plug herself in at night because she has just got so
well,
much
the amount
energy.
The amount she's putting out on, it's, I'm always impressed. I think there's one from yesterday, which was jumping out of a box in a silver, because it was her birthday. And I was like, God, this is great. I want to jump out of a box in a silver dress.
I know, and she is just, you know, and she does, she's so, you know, she so authentically believes in it, and she's just works so hard. And she is one of those people, you know how we were saying earlier with the kind of thing that you know, the way your brains work. She's very emphatic. She believes in it 100%. And I think our brains like that. It's like, this is going to transform your life. Oh, really? Yes. Okay, I must have it then. Right. But I genuinely do think her products are really good and they last for ages. You know, those stacking products, they really do.
Oh, that's a good tip. But
I might check out a bit of Trini then.
I'd love to talk to you about your book. Because
oh yes,
because I haven't read the whole thing yet. Well, actually, I'm listening to you reading it. Yes, How to Heal a Broken Heart.
You can imagine when it's the sex bits. There was some guy in the booth opposite me, like the sound producer guy. I was like,
yes, that's excruciating because it's your own. Like, yes. I've had to read audiobooks where I've had to stop and come back the next day because I'm laughing so much with the producer of trying to say this line. Which just doesn't even make sense. His jeans fell down to reveal his enormous cock. And I can't get through it now. But how did jeans just fall down? If his enormous cock is kind of presenting itself, I mean, jeans would fall down anyway, would it? Exactly.
They'd catch, anyway, it'd be like a
where's
tent.
His pants?
It's just...
Yeah. Where's his pants in this equation?
So no, it doesn't make sense, does it? His pants are probably down the bottom of the trousers from the night before. But but that's brilliant. Yes. So, well, yeah, I mean, kudos to you for reading, because actually recording an audiobook is pretty arduous. You wrote the book as well. Tell us a little bit about the book for those who haven't read it.
So when I was sort of mainly known for beauty in this column. And then when everything went wrong with my husband, which was, I guess, you know, everyone's story is different and, you know, relationships do break down. It's a fact of life, you know. And I think, but because I'd had written this column about our fun family life and, you know, it all seemed so great. And, you know, when it all sort of went horribly wrong, I lived with it for a while, sort of trying to fix it, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, became apparent it wasn't fixable. And I don't know, like, I have this sort of sense that I just have to be honest about stuff. I found it really hard to sort of have this sort of fake life where it seemed happy on Instagram and, you know, and so I went to see my editor because I'd, you know, my husband had left, and then, you know, in a sort of deeply sort of shocking way to me, you know, maybe not to him, maybe he'd sort of had that in his mind for a while or whatever, I don't know, but to me and the kids it was like we were living this, you know, totally normal family life, and then bang, it was like over, you know. And at the same time that he left, I'd moved from Red to Woman and Home because I'd an editor had gone there and she'd said come over and I'll give you a steady income and all this sort of stuff. And it didn't feel like a great fit to me, but I really liked her. So I moved from Red, and then it became apparent that actually they were doing some sort of major reshuffles at Woman and Home. So there really wasn't actually a job there. So I'd left Red, which I deeply loved. And so I had no job and no husband. And I just went to see my editor at Red, who, you know, I'd done some sort of hard negotiation with when I was sort of leaving. And so I was a bit like, okay, I'm a bit embarrassed about this. And I just told her the whole thing. And to be fair to her, she was so supportive and just so sisterly about it. And then she said, well, I don't, you know, would you want to write about it? Would that be helpful? Not because we want to sell magazines or because we want to do any of that. And I thought, do you know what, it would. Like, that is how I process stuff. So I wrote about it, and it came. And when it came out in Red, it was the level of support was just unbelievable. And you know, people were writing in, they were emailing, they said they'd never had anywhere near the response to anything they'd ever done to this, you know. So I put it onto Instagram, and then I got this enormous amount of support. But then also from this very sort of select, unfortunately it's not as select as you'd think, but this select group of women whose husbands had had affairs. I mean, lots of people do have affairs, but it's a sort of particular kind of reaction where if it's out of the blue for you, it feels very shocking. It feels like a sort of death, or, you know, your whole world is upside down. And then the person who's left is dealing with all these emotions of like guilt and shame and all of that kind of stuff. So it makes them react in a way that you just don't even recognize them. So the sort of the head fuck is just enormous. And I just thought, if this is like this for me, it's going to be like this for other people, you know, just absolutely, you know, it's just absolutely broken. And then after about 6 months, a sort of book publisher said, you know, do you think you'd write about this? And I just thought, I don't know how to do it in a way that feels helpful to people, but also tells my story. And so we sort of came up with this sort of part manual, part memoir. So it's actually, I felt so lucky that I could go and see all these people. I could talk to marriage therapists. I could talk to sort of healing practitioners. I could talk to lawyers. I could talk to, you know, financial people. And I just thought, if I can help women who are on this journey feel better and less alone, then that this is a way to do it. And so, you know, I honestly get, you know, maybe like 3 or 4 messages a day just saying thank you, which is just amazing. I mean, that's such a good feeling. Well,
it's,
you know,
such a funny book, which you wouldn't have, you know, thought with it. You wouldn't have thought that it could be a funny, but you're so funny. I mean, I've been laughing out loud listening to it. It's wonderful to listen to, because you get really the proper tone that it should be read in. And I think, I mean, I thankfully haven't been through anything that horrendous, but I'm enjoying it. And I'm finding it funny, but also I'm relating to a lot of the things you're talking about, because although a marriage hasn't broken up, I've had breakups. Yeah. And also just thinking about any sort of rejection, because it really kind of spoke to me, all those things. I mean, one thing I wrote down, which I thought was really fascinating, is when talking about the MRI scans, and checking the brain response to emotional pain and physical pain, and it's the same receptors in your brain that are affected. And I was like, God, you know, so the term heart break, or, you know, your heart is hurting, it's absolutely true, isn't it?
Yeah, you're physically hurting. And there's a Japanese there's some sort of studies coming out of Japan that it actually changes the shape of your heart. Like, it actually is, it does affect the function, like the deep stress levels. I mean, I found it really interesting that the addiction thing as well, like effectively your body, your mind is just like in an addictive cycle. And that's why people go, and it was saying, you know, it's as strong as a craving for an opioid. You'll crave your partner that strongly. What I found, actually, it wasn't really craving my partner. It was craving the stability. It was trying to get my life back, you know, because I think that out of control feeling is just so awful. So it wasn't necessarily him that I wanted. I wanted my life to be stable. I wanted to somehow get back to, you know, knowing where I was, what I was doing. And that's what I think is so stressful about divorce. You don't know where you're going to live. You don't know how your children are going to react. You don't know if they're going to go off and get married 2 months down the line, or you don't know anything. So it's just trying to find that stability again. But then on the flip side, when all that's taken away, you actually have this kind of amazing life, because you're experiencing all these things for, and it's almost like someone's peeled the layers off an onion. So you're feeling amazing stuff, you know, you're going out on dates, you're sort of, you know, for me, I think I was writing, my writing was better than it had been ever, or for a long time, since my 20s, maybe, since I felt that, you know, that kind of freedom almost. So I think there are positives and there are negatives, you know, but it was an amazing time.
And you almost get to, I mean, I haven't been through a divorce personally, but my parents divorced. And I suppose it's almost that, yeah, both our parents divorced, didn't they, when we were kids? And I imagine there's almost that reimagining of the future that you've got in front of you. So originally you've got this future plan with this person that you're going to spend your life with, and not having that anymore must be really initially distressing. But then it's sort of, well, hang on, who am I actually? Because you do sort of meld together, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And you realise how much melding you do. And I think that's what's so shocking, is you think you know this person, and they are so different for who you thought they were. But I think it's almost like you've come together, and then it's almost that then you go to your absolute opposite extremes. So, you know, that then that person becomes unrecognizable, but it does give you a chance, as you say, to think about who you are. And for me, it's given me this massive strength that I think I just always felt I needed someone to hold my hand through. I mean, weirdly, you know, very strong about a lot of stuff, but that, you know, I couldn't survive without that base level of a partner doing stuff. And I mean, I think society has has to take some blame for some of it, because, you know, it's weird, isn't it? Like, I was in hospital a few months ago, and the assumption is that your partner is going to pick you up. And actually, you know, actually my partner did pick me up. Thank you very much. But, and I was comfortable asking him, but actually, why can't you tell your best friend? You know, like, what is that about? And it's a bit like, if you're invited to a wedding, you're invited with your partner, you're not invited with your best friend. You know, society likes to lump it together. And the Instagram post that I've ever done with the most kind of reaction to is when I put a picture of me and him up, because everyone's like, oh, thank God, Rose is fixed. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And actually, you realise that the really fixed people are the people who've managed to get to the point where they're okay by themselves. Mm. You know, they're not like just like putting a sticking plaster on it. And I think a lot of people come out of a relationship, get straight into a new one, seal the deal, move in, get married, or do all those things. And actually, then they just find themselves replicating the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same. Yeah. Thing.
I do think the book is like a manual, which must be helpful, so helpful to people that you've probably sort of changed people's lives, really. I mean, to think that you've actually helped people through, which you will have done, because I can see, having listened to it, that it is enormously helpful.
Oh, thank you. I think it's made a lot of people feel less alone, because I think the shame stops people talking. And so there aren't that many. And also the rejection, as you were saying, you know, I think it can be being made redundant, or it can be not getting a part, or it can be me not getting commissioned, or all those things. It's funny. I think, you know, rejection is really, really hard. And I think that feels like the most personal kind of rejection. No, thanks. No, thanks very much. I don't really want you. I would like this person over here, you know. But, you know, I think I've used it in my life as well to deal with stuff when, you know, I've been rejected in other ways.
Yeah. It's so great, because when you've been talking about your writing, you've always talked about, you know, the authenticity, and that is what has connected everybody, you know, and why people love your writing so much. I used to read your column every month when you were at Red, and I used to love it. And I think that's why when you came on, I just thought, I feel like I know you, and yet I've never spoken to you. So it didn't feel, sometimes when we interview people, I go, oh my God, they're here. But I sort of felt, oh, Rosie's here, you know, because you share that, and you share that. I think we all think that we're a bit odd, and then when somebody says, this has happened to me, we go, oh, I'm not. I'm normal. You know, this is just life stuff. And it's so...
This is just life.
It's just life.
And I think the trouble with Instagram and stuff is it can present this other... You know, and I'm guilty of that too, you know. I don't like to put a picture up if I don't look nice or whatever. But I think, you know, the big thing that people connect with me is they say, you know, actually... It makes me feel better. Your husband left you. Like, he left me. There's no two ways about that. He left me. He wanted someone else, you know. And I think a lot of people, because the ego can't take it, you know, they're like, okay, well, you know, obviously, like, when celebs put out their things, you know, we've just drifted apart. We didn't, you know. It doesn't say the truth, you know. And if other people are like, okay, well, your husband left you, my husband left me, I can see that actually you're doing all right and you're not a hideous person, so therefore that makes me feel better about that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Have you got any other books in the pipeline? Kind of, what's the next thing? I mean, I know you're interviewing David Gandy, which is very exciting.
I'm interviewing David Gandy next. Yes, exactly.
I think actually we might need to come along for that chat.
I think so. Yeah. I think we'll just stay here.
Well, what questions have you got for him? It's a beauty chat. So I'm going to ask him about, like, body pressures for men versus women. Like, you know, I think he's 44 now. Like, how does he feel about, you know, and he makes his money by, you know, selling his looks. So it's like, how does he feel about that? I want to know.
Yeah, because it just seems slightly easier for men. But is it that men seem to just are allowed to age, whereas women, as soon as we get the hint of a gel, we're, you know, it's a bit scary. It's very, it does seem different, but I suppose, yeah, is it? How does he feel about it?
Yeah.
But yeah, what are your plans? Have you got things you want to do next? Are you happy with everything you're doing?
Well, if I'm really, really honest, I've got two children. I've got A-levels and GCSEs this year. So I sort of actually signed myself up to getting them through that.
Brilliant.
Which is super sexy. And I think it's not something that I'm very good at. I don't really like kind of staying in and being, but I think they just need me to be here and you know, I'm a single parent. Like, I do most of it. I do like 95% of it. And actually, I haven't got them for much longer, I don't think, as in they're 16 and 18. So I think I'm just going to really try and knuckle down and do that. I'd like to, I was speaking to my book publisher because a lot of women write me letters and they tell me their story. So I thought about maybe compiling all of that into a book, sort of state of affairs book. And I've sort of got an idea for a podcast, but it's quite a lot of work, isn't it, ladies? I mean, you will know.
It is, but it's a great joy. It is a lovely thing. I chatting to you and connecting with people and knowing that that link goes back, kind of, that we've got Kelly, a mutual friend in common, and I don't know. And you're from Birmingham, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love Birmingham. I feel like I want to go. I went back about, actually for Kelly's daughter's 18th, I went back and took my daughter, and it was unrecognisable.
Yeah, it's so different. Yeah. And all by the library, and they've taken Paradise Forum down. And now when you're by the library and you look across, you can actually see the architecture, and it's so beautiful. We were sat in Dishoom last year looking out, and my friend lives in Guernsey now, and I took a video for her because I said, you just won't recognise it. It just looks so beautiful, and Birmingham gets a bad rap, you know, but we're the second city.
You know what Birmingham does? I think, you know, it's like, I was talking to a friend and both her children are redheads, and she was like, it's the last acceptable ism. And I was like, no, it isn't. Coming from Birmingham, it's the last acceptable ism. And, you know, it's so bad, is it? Like another mate, you know, like with Kelly, she, you know, she's incredibly successful, blah, blah. And if we're going to a restaurant or something, she's like, oh, you ring and make that booking. I'm like, why? And she's like, oh, well, you know, I they always react funny, you know, they're going to react funny to me with my accent. I'm like, oh my God, you know, it is. I do think people, you know, have a certain judgment, and that really, really annoys me.
Yeah, it really annoys me as well. You just wonder, where did that start? I mean, it must have been somebody did some kind of comic version of a Brummie or something, and then it just...
I think, do you remember the advert in the 80s? Or was it the 80s? We want to be together. It was all that sort of together. But I have noticed, and before you go, I do want to talk to you about this, but on This Morning, we've got our chum, the lovely Alison Hammond, who we grew up with Kelly as well. And actually, Kelly, when we talk about Kelly, she was on, was it series one? With Edie's in Cornwall, which is the most amazing restaurant. She was one of our guests, and which is like Michelin, in the Michelin Guide now. She's so lovely. I had such a girl crush on Kelly when I was 14. She's the coolest girl. Oh my God, I just thought she was the coolest girl.
And so, I mean, just her lovely little face is just so scrubby, isn't it?
Yeah. Gorgeous. She was just beautiful and cool. When I came back from the Edinburgh Festival after we'd been there, I started smoking silk curtain, listening to Saint Etienne. I'm reading Elle magazine.
I remember that. Let's just make up. Yeah.
But I was going to say about This Morning, we've got Alison on there. Then Kat Dealey's been presenting, Emma Willis, you present on there. Midlanders, all Brummies.
Midlanders. Actually, so, thank you very much. That's a feature. I'm going to get a feature. And I interviewed Kat actually recently, and she is, I'd met her before a long time ago, and she's just so warm and friendly, isn't she? And she's, she's just, and beautiful.
And beautiful, with amazing hair.
And she's got the accent. She's got the Brummie accent.
Yeah, she has.
Represent.
Yeah, she has. It's been so lovely to talk to you. We've had you for an hour. We were only going to have you for 45 minutes, so I'm sorry about that.
But no, I've loved
it. It's been glorious.
It has been glorious. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. I hope you have a little party. Can you have a little party with everyone you've done? I think that would be brilliant.
Absolutely.
Well, that's a really good idea.
And you can bring David Gander.
I'll bring David.
I'm sorry that's your afternoon, Rosie. I'm so sorry that's your afternoon. You've got to interview David Gandy and look at his face. Oh God, like shit, isn't it?
He's in Dubai, obviously.
Thank you so much. I've absolutely loved every second of this. It's been lovely.
Thank
to talk
you.
To
well, you. Me too. And sending lots of love, and I hope you have a lovely Friday.
Thank you, and you.
Bye, Rosie. Bye. Thanks so much.
You have been listening to Limited Time Only.
I love Rosie Green, and I would like to be her very close friend, and I hope she's down with that, because I'm just going to make it happen. I'm just going to, you know, hang around her a lot and stuff like that.
I think if we set up a WhatsApp group called I Love Rosie Green and we invite her, I think it's going to work.
I think it's going to work.
I think she's not going to think that's weird.
I don't think so. No.
No, we're not weird at all, are we, Esther?
We're in the slightest. We're completely normal. And she was gorgeous. I love her.
Oh, it was great to talk to her. And so actually useful as well. I feel like I've got some great tips of things to go and spend my money on.
Yes, definitely.
For my birthday.
Yeah.
We'll get presents. Because it's my birthday, guys, just to let you know.
FYI.
Around about now. So, yeah. I mean, you know, presents are welcome throughout the year. It's fine.
March the 15th, Lackwood by Bureau.
Absolutely. Oh. Well, yes, it was great to talk to her. And what a fitting finish to season three.
End of season.
We've had a lovely season with some really, well, every single guest has been absolutely superb. And it's been lovely chatting to you, Esther, as well.
And it's been lovely chatting to you, Susie. We've been very lucky to have fabulous guests and fabulous conversation with each other.
And also some fabulous conversations starting on the social media.
Yes. Thank you to you all for responding to our questions and engaging and having a little chat with us and sharing bits about your life. We do love it and we really appreciate it. All your support always means the world to both of us.
We're on Patreon, which we'll do more on next season as well. So if you're mulling over joining, have a look. You can see a few things on there, even if you're not a subscriber. But do consider subscribing, and we have lots of fun, especially on our LTO Live online. Don't we, guys?
Yes, we do.
Thank you very much. So what's happening now, Esther? We've got a little break for a few weeks, and we're going to come back on the 2nd of May. Might be somebody else's birthday. Esther Stanford will be 35 on the 2nd of May.
Yes, 35 for the 12th year, 11th year, something like that.
I don't know how old I am either. Couldn't remember this morning. Oh, so we'll be back and we've got some super guests lined up already. We won't be completely taking a break. We are going to be recording stuff and getting things lined up for you. So, yeah, it's exciting. We're looking forward to it. And thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
LTO, a pick-me-up in podcast form.
Thanks for listening. See you next season. I'm not getting paid for this, you know.